Whether you keep them in your home or love to see them in theirs, these are the creatures that bring us all together.
Reptiles. We're going to be delving into the experiences of reptile lovers from around the block and around the world. This is the Reptile Talk Podcast.
Boom! What is up, everybody? This is Jeremy Turgeon from Brass Man Reptiles.
And I'm Robin, I'm creeping it real.
Full of energy as if he hasn't already been standing up for an hour. Hi, Rob.
Yeah, let's go.
So
I was
this
born
is
standing up. So
this could be true. this is a double header. If you're watching us on YouTube, then you're getting a double dose of Reptile Talk. If you are one of our audio only listeners, you're hearing this a little later, but we're super excited that you decided to join us. How are you, Rob? Hour two. How are you doing?
Dude, I'm loving it. I'm really excited to have this guest on tonight. This is someone who I learned about not super long ago, but holy moly, like I'm very excited to pick their brain a little bit and get a chance to talk to them because they're doing some really interesting stuff.
Heck yeah, same. No, I'm super stoked. As always, this episode is brought to you by
Black Box Cages.
Go check it out.
If you use the code ReptileTalk at checkout, you actually get a really cool discount, and that lets them know that you're listening to our podcast. So if you are planning on buying something, or you should think about buying something, make sure that at checkout, put in ReptileTalk, and you'll get a little off the top, you know, even if it helps sell the shipping.
Top, man. Yep. Little off the top. Everybody could use a little off the top. Save some money. Mm-hmm. I was not going on a sideways joke. I promise. I caught it, Rob. I caught it. You shut up.
I thought you usually pitch.
Well, without further ado, we're going to bring Aiden on. What is up, dude?
What is up?
Dude, I'm so hyped to have you on tonight. I'm very thankful that you made some time to hang out with us and talk reptiles tonight.
Yeah, appreciate you guys asking me.
Heck yeah. I got you, Rob. I beat you. So for those who might not know who you are or what got you started in reptiles, just give us a brief synopsis.
So my dad has been into reptiles since he was little too. And so I've been into reptiles since I was super little.
Dude.
He got me and my brothers two Argus monitors when I was like 4 or 5.
Well, that's awesome.
A pair of them, but he called them ours. That's really what got me into reptiles. And, I've just been keeping them since. And been into Dumeril's monitors and green tree pythons in the past couple of years.
That's one of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about was the Dumeril's monitors, because you've been successful in reproducing them multiple times now. And Dumeril's monitors are one of those things that, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, they were very commonly available as imports, and people were like, oh my God, these things are really cool. You know, see the babies with the bright colored heads. Yeah. And then, as ball pythons became more popular and some other, you know, people branched off into other things, that's a species that kind of fell by the wayside and you didn't really see people working with them anymore. And then boom, like,
yeah,
you had them in your back pocket and you're like, oh, you forgot about these right here.
Yeah,
dude, that's so awesome. So your dad kept Argus monitor. The Argus monitor thing threw me for a loop, I'm not gonna lie, because I worked with some Argus monitors and holy crap.
Yeah, they're crazy. Right. And we kept them outside too in Southern California. The weather's not bad for them.
That's
cool. Yeah, it was sick.
So what kind of enclosure did you guys use for them?
It was like a garden kind of thing. It was made out of like cinder blocks kind of.
Oh, cool.
With like a screen top.
Dude, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
That's really
that's
cool.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like the list of people who've had like cool first reptiles. I think Argus monitors.
Yeah, that's up there, man. That's that's wild.
That is pretty awesome, dude. Heck yeah. So with the Doomerals monitors, like what attracted you to them?
Honestly, I don't know. I've known about them for like since I was a little kid in books and stuff, but I never really thought about getting one. And then I actually got my first one trading a retic for it because I just didn't. It was getting too big and I just didn't want it anymore.
Smart move.
Right. Yeah, right, exactly.
After a couple of years of having her, I thought about breeding them, and then I ended up getting a male. And then, like, right when I put them together, they started breeding.
Dude, but first clutch, so awesome.
The first clutch was infertile, but I don't know if that was my fault or if just the female's first clutch.
That's almost all the monitor species that I work with. The female's first clutch is always infertile.
Yeah.
Especially if it's her first time reproducing. She'll throw one clutch of junk eggs. Usually it's a small clutch with not fertilized eggs. And then after that, she starts her regular cycle. And that's when you can get reproductive eggs.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went. But I messed up the second clutch too. She laid 10 perfect eggs and I didn't have a good incubator. And I messed all of those up.
Oh, dang.
It's rough, but it's part of the learning process, in my opinion. You know, I'm trying to think, I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about the first time that, I think it was albino Burmese pythons got bred. They're like, oh yeah, the first clutch, absolute trash. We didn't know what we were doing. Completely ruined them. And they were like, we were waiting for those babies to hatch out and we ruined all of it. And then like, they're like, the second clutch, we got some babies to hatch out. And then we started really figuring out what we're supposed to be doing. And I think that for a lot of people, that's part of the process. You know, you get a clutch and you're like, oh man, I don't know what the best way to go forward, especially because like, there's no information about breeding Doomerals monitors or incubating their eggs. So like you're kind of flying by night. You can maybe go by other monitor species and how their eggs are incubated, but it's still not the same, you know?
Yeah. There's one guy who I'm friends with now who's produced some back in the day. His name's Ben Aller. He bred them from like the early 2000s till 2014.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And I got a lot of insight from him. But
that's awesome.
I would say they're not a whole lot different than other monitors breeding-wise.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
How long was the incubation for those?
The first clutch I did it at 84, and they went like 199 days. And the last one came out like 205 or something. And then... the other clutches I've done at 85, and it's always like 185 days.
185. It's like 6 months.
I was gonna say that's oh god, the weight.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah.
That's always one of the most like anxiety inducing things, right? Because of course, like for those folks who don't know 100%, like the longer an incubation period is, the higher you have of a chance of something going wrong, essentially. Yeah. You know, so we're talking about, you know, 2 months for this or 2 months for that. And everyone's like, God, I'm so nervous. Imagine 6 months.
Yeah.
Just imagine that. That's brutal. That is brutal.
The first time, especially, I was like super nervous and checking on them every week and or like every other day and stuff. But now I just kind of let them sit.
Yep.
Couple weeks.
Yeah.
Dude, that's how it was with my first clutch of scrubs. I was in there every single day, just like looking at them, like, you guys still good in there, bro?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, like it's for air exchange.
Justify it for yourself. I didn't put an air hole for a reason. I had to come check on them.
Yeah,
dude. And so how many clutches of Doomerals have you produced now?
I think 5 or maybe 6, but one clutch was just 2 babies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was actually from a female that Ben Aller produced in 2014.
Really?
Yeah. So
you're able to track down some of his animals?
I actually got it from him.
Oh, that's awesome.
And a few months ago, I actually gave it back to him because my male and her, she doesn't get along with my male. So I had to get a male on loan from a friend, and the male ended up dying. So I didn't have any other male for her. So I ended up just giving her back. And she's 2014, so she's turning 10 this year. So I just wanted her to be with him anyway.
Dude, at that age. That's wild. And that's another thing that, like, from working at Nerd and working with their monitors, there are certain females that are like that, where they're like, I only get along with this one male, or I don't get along with males. We had two females that got along with no males at all. Like, you put any male in there and she'll try and kill them.
Yeah.
And then we had probably three or four, maybe three, that, like, they like one male and they'll tolerate him only. And if you put anyone else in there, they'll kick their butt. And I think that's one of the things with monitors a lot of people might not think about, because some people, I've seen people where they're like, I got a pair of monitors and I'm just going to breed those pair of monitors. But if they don't like each other, like, they can run into some serious issues.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I got lucky with my imported pair. Those, that's who gives me all the clutches mainly, is the imported pair, female. And I got lucky with them. They were the first two Doomerals I got, and they got along, like, right from the get-go.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And
and also, a testament to establishing the animals, too, right? Because just in general, establishing imports can always be a roller coaster.
Chaos. They were long-term captive. They've been here for a while, but yeah.
Oh, cool.
Both initially wild-caught. That's really cool. How long did you... did you introduce, or did you cohab them for, like, a long time, or did you do introductions for, like, pairing?
When I first got them, or now, you mean?
I guess either or.
When I first got them, I just put them together because I didn't even have a second cage. But now I keep them separate except for when I'm pairing them. And normally she lays, like, every 100 days, but... her last clutch was, like, half infertile, so I've been giving her a longer break this time.
Heck yeah.
That's really cool. I'm trying to think of, like, the time schedule for the Asian water monitors, because after a female laid, I think we were waiting, like, 6 weeks, and then we would start pairing her again.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think normally I would do, like, 8 weeks. Normally, and then, like, normally it's like 30 days from the first lock that she'll lay.
Yep.
Like most monitors.
Yeah, that's, dude, that's really cool.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see the similarities and the differences between the Doomerals and like something like Salvatore, where we kind of have, like, figured that stuff out, where it's like, okay, yeah, it's like, once we have a pair, we know we can pair together. It's like clockwork kind of after that, you know? So it's interesting to hear those similarities and differences. I'm still over here, like, thinking 6 months of incubation is torture.
Especially for how small the eggs are. It's crazy. Like, it's like the same time as a water monitor goes, but their eggs are way smaller.
Yeah. So, like roughly how big, like maybe 50-cent size, like 50-cent coin size, or
it's like the same size as a green tree python egg. If you've seen them, I'm sure. Wow. They're very small. Yeah. Or like a tree monitor, like
ping pong ball.
Yeah.
Like, jeez, pretty much like a tree monitor egg, almost exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Jeez. They're like 8 grams when they come out.
Wow.
8 grams? Oh my god. We're hatching out little leopard geckos.
Yeah, they're tiny.
Dude, that is so tiny. Cause, like, I'm pretty sure I was weighing my baby scrubs, and, like, my smallest ones were like 20 grams or 30 grams when they hatched.
Yeah.
Yeah, jeez.
Yeah, they're tiny. The green trees too, they're like almost the same size.
That's so
I I'm immediately thinking to is just like stuff like chameleons.
Yes,
like panther chameleons and stuff, when you have 200 plus days of incubation for a lima bean. to pop out, you know. Yeah. You're just like, why did this take so long?
Yeah.
But dude, man, that's crazy though.
So what's your average clutch size? Are you looking at like more than 7 or 10 eggs?
Yeah, most of the time her lowest clutch was 8 eggs, and that was the first one. It was all slugs.
Mm-hmm.
And then besides that, the lowest has been 10. And the most, I think, was 14. But she's a small female. The other female from Ben Aller, she laid like 16 eggs one time. But wow. Most were slugs.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's still a good size clutch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben told me the most he's got is like 24.
What the hell?
Wow. Sheesh.
That's crazy. Oh, man. And what sort of diet are you doing for your generals?
A lot of crustaceans, like shrimp and crawfish, crab. But I also give them like quail chicks and just chicken, day-old chicken chicks. Occasionally, I'll give them like a mouse, but very rarely.
Mm. Hmm.
But other stuff too, fish.
Do insects and stuff or no?
I have for the babies, I do, but for the adults, I don't really.
Mm.
Interesting.
That is really interesting.
Yeah,
I think that like conventional wisdom is like a lot of people look at monitors that are not the larger monitor species, and they're like, "Oh, just feed them insects." And I guess, I mean, crustaceans are basically just water insects, right? So
I think they're bigger than a lot of people think too. They're like a male is like the size of like a small Salvatore female. They're pretty big, 4.5 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Sheesh.
I don't know if I've ever seen one that big. I think the biggest ones I've ever seen were probably like maybe like 2.5 or maybe 3 foot, like with tail and everything. Like they're not super big.
I can show you guys the male or both if you guys want to. They're just right over here.
I mean,
yeah, I'm not gonna say no.
Yeah, I'm not gonna say no at all. And for anyone, I'll narrate for people who are listening to the audio only.
Yeah, yeah. What you need to do is get your ass over to YouTube, scrub to 1752, and you'll be.
Thank
able
you
to
for scrub. The timestamp, Jeremy.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Don't see him.
So you got lots of cork rounds in there. Yeah. Got some plants and everything. Closure. What do you keep your basking spot at roughly?
It's about 130.
Okay.
140 maybe.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to find him real quick.
Hell yeah.
Oh, he's right here.
He's like tucked away in his tube.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Yep, in the tube. Heck yeah.
That's okay. We don't have to bother him.
Cage.
Oh, man.
Look at him. Look at him.
He's pretty big, though. You kind of see.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, that's awesome.
Damn.
So, yeah, he looks like he's what, probably about 3 foot?
Yeah, he's like 3.5 feet.
That's cool.
40 inches about.
Heck yeah.
Oh, man. That's cool.
That is freaking awesome. How big is that enclosure?
It's 8x4x4.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And same size enclosure for the female?
Yeah, it's, I don't know if you can see it. They're on top of each other, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's super cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So does she prefer to lay in like in the substrate in the enclosure, or do you provide like a nesting like tube or a box or?
So she's only nested in this enclosure one time, but half of the bottom is just nesting, like 13 inches deep, like 2x2 feet of nesting.
Yeah, that's what we do for the water monitors.
And
that's
what we did. When she nested in there, she just found a spot and dug like a foot down and nested.
Hmm. Does she do a lot of like test holes, or does she just like she?
Not really like a serious one, but she'll like poke around a little bit.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we were doing the water monitors, you could always tell when a female's getting close to the lane because she'll dig like test holes that are like, you know, 6 inches, 8 inches deep, where she'll dig down in there and be like, yeah, maybe this isn't the one. And then she'll go dig another one and dig another one. And before she actually decides which one that she's going to actually lay the eggs in.
Yeah. I've definitely heard that.
Yeah. That's really cool.
That is super cool. I love the setup. I'm just like processing, just similar to you, Rob. I'm just like processing like the similarities between like the Asian water monitors and like what we experienced with that. So it's interesting to think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, when I sell them, I tell people just set them up like a Salvatore. Pretty much, they're just smaller, maybe a little more wet, but that's really it.
Heck yeah,
that's really cool.
I'm also still like 8 grams.
Yeah.
Like, just thinking about that, man.
I think
like,
the biggest one's probably been like 14 grams or something.
That's wild.
Sheesh. Yeah, we're like hatching leopard geckos. Like, man. But that's so freaking cool. I'm just, for me, I think one of the things that, that intrigues me the most about all of this is like we're talking about a species that, you know, we kind of discussed a little bit before, like has just kind of existed, you know, like nobody's really spent the time to, you know, really invest, you know, in understanding them and let alone reproducing them, you know? So you go to a reptile show and you're like, oh, Doomerl's monitor, you know, and you just kind of walk past it. You don't really give it a second thought, you know? So it's cool to get some information on a species that ordinarily isn't even really sought after
thought
like
about.
That. You know, or thought about. Yeah. So this is, it's super interesting.
I remember when I was younger looking into monitor species, just cause I knew that monitors are like highly intelligent and, you know, just having a large lizard is just like so interesting, and looking at being like, okay, my parents are not going to let me get a 6 foot water monitor. So what's a smaller monitor species that I could, you know, research a little bit about? And Doomerls were one of those monitors where, you know, I was like, okay, so they're not huge. You know, you can feed them a little bit of a different diet than what you're feeding. You're primarily like, you know, back then a lot of people were like, oh yeah, just feed water monitors chicken and hot dogs and crap, you know, just like horrible stuff. But yeah, I did research Doomerls for a little bit. And I think the people's biggest gripe with the Doomerls is just that their head doesn't stay orange when they get big. But like,
yeah,
it's still a cool looking monitor, though.
It's still a really cool looking monitor.
Yeah, I like the adult colors just as much as the baby color.
Yeah.
And the color change is super cool to see.
So how long do you find that it takes them to go through that color change?
So the orange is normally, like the bright orange is normally gone in like 8 or 10 weeks.
Wow, that's quick.
But, that's fast, yeah.
But they still change. Like the first clutch just turned, or they turned a year old in February. They're still changing for sure. Like noticeably every few weeks I can notice they're different.
That's awesome. That's-
Heck yeah, dude.
And it's just little things like that that are, you know, I don't want to say lost, but like without people like you reproducing them, that's not something that would be documented. People would be like, oh, they're orange, and then they just turn, you know, brown, and people don't have that appreciation for, no, they go through like these different stages in their development as they reach their mature coloration and patterning and everything. That's really cool. Yeah. And your other love is green tree pythons.
Yeah.
Yeah, as the wall of cages behind him.
Yeah.
So like are you working with specific locale stuff, or are you trying to work towards designer stuff, or
yeah, they're pretty much all locality stuff. I have one or two that are like locality crosses, but all the other ones are locality.
Do you have a favorite locale?
I really like Beox. I don't know. I don't know if I would say it's my favorite, but yeah.
Heck like the variability, the size, the temperament.
I think, I don't know, they're chiller than a lot of people think, especially Captive Red.
Yeah.
I don't have any imported ones now. but yeah.
Yeah. I remember dealing with or working with some wild caught Biaks, and they earned every bit of the reputation that they had. But I've also worked with some captive bred ones that were like super chill. Yeah. So I think that a lot of that comes from, you know, imports and, you know, imported snakes, especially like green tree pythons, are not treated super great in that importation process. So like for them to hold a grudge against people, I understand, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Sheesh. So how many green trees do you have in total?
About a dozen adults, 10 or so adults, and maybe like 20 babies that I hatch.
Yeah.
Heck, so how many clutches have you done for green trees?
3. All hatched last year.
Dude.
That's freaking awesome.
That's got to be satisfying that you hit Dumerils, monitors, and green tree pythons in the same year.
Yeah, the first clutch of green trees hatched in January. And then the Dumerils hatched in February. And then
back to back.
In March, more green trees hatched in March.
Hell yeah, Dumerils, dude.
More Dumerils in like May. It's crazy.
At first you're like, this is really awesome. This is really exciting. I'm getting a little overwhelmed with the amount of babies right now.
Yeah.
Not overwhelmed, but like, yeah, you're looking like, oh man, I gotta clean so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah, it came fast.
I just when I got myself into a rhythm.
Oh, so how did you find starting the baby green trees? Were they an issue for you, or do you find that yours started okay?
The first two clutches were like pretty easy. Almost all of them ate on the first try.
That's awesome.
Except for a few of them, and those were not hard to get to eat. And then the third clutch was just a pain in the ass. Like, almost none of them ate on the first try, and they were all hard to get to eat.
Yep.
But I established like 6 from that clutch.
Damn. So what were you offering that they all took like right off the bat?
Just day old pinkies, some scented with chick down.
What the fuck, man?
Dude. He's like, yeah, I don't know what everybody's bitching about. He's These like, are really easy to get going, dude.
I don't know if it makes a difference, but the first two clutches were both from captive bred adults that my uncle hatched. Okay. So they're F2 babies eating.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know if that
that's
really
fair. That probably thing, plays
a little bit, a little bit, but still.
Yeah.
And are you feeding like at nighttime? Are you feeding during the day or?
I think the first time I offered was probably at nighttime, but now I feed them all in the morning.
Yep. Yeah, after watching Matt Somerville's story from Australia, where he's out in that Northern Territory, I think it was Northern Territory, and he's seeing all these green tree pythons, and the babies are exclusively hunting during the daytime, and then they perch all night, and then the adults are hunting at nighttime and perching all day. I was like, have we been doing this wrong the whole time? Should we only be offering trying to feed green trees while it's bright outside? What is going on right now?
Yeah, apparently the babies are eating like exclusively lizards in the wild, pretty much.
Yeah,
and that would make sense that they're eating in the day.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. And also, it makes sense. Like I've heard from a lot of like older green tree breeders, like when they would try to feed at night, a trick that they would use is to shine a bright flashlight into the and I'm like, that seems counterintuitive if you're trying to feed when it's nighttime, but learning what we've learned.
Yeah.
It's that does help. Huh.
I just remember talking to a lot of green tree python people and they're like, yeah, man, I was sitting with a red little flashlight in the pitch black for 3 hours, holding a pinky still up to the thing's nose, praying that it will try and eat it, you know?
Yeah.
it's just like,
it's like, nah, dude, just find a skink, just go for it, dude.
Well, it's just like, man, if somebody was like waking you up at 3 a.m. every day and they're like, eat this hamburger, eat it, and you're like, I don't And then they're like, man, these people just don't want to eat. We're trying to give them food and they're just not eating, man. This is crazy.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh gosh. Dude,
that's wild.
That is wild. I'm here for it though. Are there any so you've got a lot, I assume you have a lot more BX stuff than anything else?
Yeah, mostly. I'd say Biak and Jaipura.
Yeah, that's my favorites. I don't know what it is, man. The blue with the green, I don't know. They just, they're definitely my favorites as far as green tree goes.
Heck yeah, I really like them too.
Are you trying to get into other localities, or you like just sticking to what you got?
Pretty much just the Biak and Jaipura stuff for right now. I have a couple Highland type animals. Cool. Mm-hmm. Those are pretty cool, but I don't know. Highland is such a broad term. I feel like, especially in the green tree world, especially for captive bred stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
With the scrubs too, people are like, "How come this Highland doesn't look like this Highland? Doesn't look like this Highland?" And I'm like, I mean, like this. Y'all came in as Highlands. I'm sorry, man. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry. And they're like, "Well, I really like the look of this one, but I don't really like the look of this one." And I'm like, "I don't know what to tell you."
Right.
Because like, I don't know if you saw, there's like there's some that were captive bred in Europe, and they're Highland animals, but they're like black. They've got black patterning on them, and then the gold sidebars. And I'm like, okay, that's really cool, but like, it looks nothing like my Highland. It's like an Oxibil Highland, which looks nothing like the like gold pattern Highlands that I've seen around too. So it's like, it's such a loose term with lots of different like phenotypic differences. Are they all the same thing, or is it just like a gray banded king snake situation where there's like this highway, they look different than that one. I don't know.
Man. Oh, that's God. Cool. 7 mile road. 7 mile road.
That's cool that you have like the Oxibil scrubs or whatever, though. Like, we don't even really have like documented green trees like that, especially from over there.
Yeah. And it's crazy because they've been done for so long. Like, in the scheme of things, green tree pythons have been coming from there for so long, and they have been bred over there and brought in as captive hatched offspring for so long that you'd think that after a while, they're like, why don't we start getting like locales of these things? Like, cause they had like general locale stuff that was being brought in. But the guy who was working for Bushmaster at the Indonesia facility, man, it must've been 10 years ago now, but he passed away. He was the one who was breeding all of their green tree pythons. Yeah. And then when he passed away, there was not anyone who had the touch like he did about reproducing them. And that's when we saw this like crazy drop off of the amount of green tree pythons that were coming into the United States.
Yeah. I believe that was like Vitaly was the name thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is wild. It's wild. It's crazy.
Yeah, I like the locality stuff a lot more than the mixes, the designer. And stuff. But I do like a lot of the like blue line and calico stuff. Like, it just looks insane. Like,
I like a lot of that stuff, but also I look at it and I'm like, you can only really appreciate it for a certain amount of time. I feel like I haven't seen a lot of those animals that are like full grown, fully changed, fully developed adults that still look as crazy as they did when they were going through their color change.
Yeah. There's some like super high end ones that are like that, but they ask like crazy money for them.
Very few and far between as far as that goes. When then you got your females that are like the hormonal blue ones, or it's like they turn blue after they reproduce, but it's like there's no guarantee that that's going to happen, you know? And then you also have to breed them to get that hormonal color.
Yeah. That's mainly a locality thing too. Like the southern females will do that a lot, and the west northwestern females will do that a lot.
Hmm.
But Yeah. See,
I don't know a whole lot about green tree pythons, to be perfectly honest. I've kept some and worked with some, like not personally. I've worked with them at facilities that I was at, but I've never personally kept them, and I don't think I ever will. they're cool. They're cool snakes. It's just not for me, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to be dodging more bites.
Honestly, a lot of the green tree pythons that I've worked with have been really chill, like really, like almost like people would think that there's something wrong with how chill they were, you know, like because conventional wisdom is like green tree pythons are going to light you up and like just they are just right. All teeth. And it's like I've worked with a bunch of captive born and captive bred green tree pythons where, you know, you use a gentle hook or if you take the perch out and let them come out on their own time. And they're really chill. They're just curious and checking everything out. And it's like, yeah, if you go in there with a hook and rip it off the branch, of course it's going to try and, you know, murk you. It's not going to be a fan of what's going on, but like, you know.
Yeah. Mine pretty much just have like a feed response in the cage.
Yeah.
And then once you get the perch out, they're chilling. Or like once you just jolt the perch, they know that they're going to come out.
Right.
So are there any other, what other species are you working with, anything else, or is just mostly just focused on those things?
I have a pair of rhino iguanas I keep outside.
Hell yeah.
And a pair of box turtles that are in with them.
That's cool.
That's it for right now, but my uncle has some Arizona mountain king snakes in March to pair up this season.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That is cool. That is definitely cool.
Yeah, it'll be my first time trying to breed a colubrid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's nothing like it, especially when they try to eat each other.
King snakes.
Yeah, literally. That was like my... haunting childhood memory was breeding cow kings and like pairing things together before going to school. Mm-hmm. And I would always do the cow kings first so that I could get through the whole rack. And if they were going to try to eat each other, usually was going to happen in that first five or 10 minutes. And I will never forget, dude, I had paired, they were like big cow kings, paired them up and nothing happened. I was good. I made it through the rest of the rack. No problems. As I'm about to walk out the door, I just hear like run back in the room. They're like just attached to each other. I'm like, no, we're not making it the first block today. Show up late to school. Teacher's like, where were you? You're not going to believe.
You're not going to believe. You.
Dude. Oh gosh, king snakes are fun, guys.
So another thing I wanted to talk to you about is herping, because you are an avid herper and getting out there and seeing stuff out in the wild, dude. Where is your favorite place that you've been to, or what's your favorite thing that you found so far?
I don't know. I really like herping in Arizona. Like the mountains in Arizona is really fun, but I'd say the favorite thing I've found is probably mountain king snakes so far.
Heck yes.
Yeah, I haven't been able to do a proper Arizona herping trip yet. I've just been like so run flat out with my jobs and everything that I've not been able to make it happen, but I need to, because I need to see Willard Eye and Lepidus, like, in the worst kind of way.
Yeah. When I went, I didn't see any Willard Eye, but we saw three rock rattlesnakes. Ooh. In South Arizona. That was sick.
Dude.
Yes. I'm waiting for that trip to happen for Rob, because I know the insanity that will ensue upon finding Lepidus. It's just going to be a barrage of Instagram stories that are going to be like zoom ins of said Lepidus. And then like the camera's going to turn around and it's just going to be. And I'm here for all of it. I'm here for every bit of it.
and one of the ones that I'm really excited to see that is probably not high on a lot of people's list is just Melosis, the blacktail rattlesnakes.
Yeah.
Those, the ones from the southeast Arizona where they got that like crazy yellow and the really dark contrast on them.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is like, I think that is like one of the best looking rattlesnakes in the world, man. There's just something about them that just tickles my brain in all the right places. I'm like, oh man, that is just the coolest thing, man.
Yeah, those are sick. I didn't get to see any of those either.
Really?
And they're all over Arizona. I've been to North Arizona more than South Arizona and still haven't seen any. Or black rattlesnakes. Yeah.
Oh man.
Damn.
Yeah,
I'm sending bucket list species, target species for the coming year.
Yeah. That'll be a lifer for sure.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
That's crazy because I've heard that the Melosis are not super difficult to come by. And they do have a really wide distribution, but yeah, I guess sometimes it's like you just, you know, herping is part research and part luck. Like you just got to be in the right place at the right time to catch one crossing a road or to see it moving about or, you know, happening upon it in a spot that it frequents, you know?
Yeah. When we were there too, we were mainly just looking for willard eye and Lepidus.
Yeah.
But we just saw the Lepidus. But I think if we really looked for the Melosis, we would find some.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What time of year did you go?
It was like early September, just
okay,
like four or five months ago or whatever that was.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Since I moved to North Carolina, I've done more herping in the last 2 years than I've done in the last 10, probably just from work and everything.
Yeah.
But I haven't been able to travel a lot to do herping, so that's like on my list for 2024. I need to do some travel to do some herping because Arizona has to happen. I've been trying to go to Arizona for the last 3 years and I've not been able to make it happen. Damn. And then I want to do another Florida trip just to see if I can see some more rattlesnakes in Florida.
Yeah.
And then nice. I really really want to do an East Texas trip for water snakes.
Ooh.
Dude, broadbanded water snakes are heavy on my mind and I'm like, I need to go see some. I gotta do it.
Heck yeah.
That's it.
Heck yeah.
Are there any places that you're like trying to go herping for this year?
I don't know. I'd like to go to like Baja. But I don't know. Like, I don't know. I've heard mixed things about going there, but that would be sick to do. Look for mountain kings and rattlesnakes in Baja.
Mm-hmm.
That would be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome.
I was talking with Mark the other day, and I was telling him, Rob, about how we had been talking about like trying to do like a big Florida trip from like the south to the north. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something that I still want to plan, both to like see friends, but also like herping in Florida is just fun.
Yes.
Yeah, we were walking through the swamp, just snapping up banded water snakes everywhere. We're like, and none of them tried to bite us, which is still very confusing to me.
Yeah, right. I know we were apparently tainted by northern water snakes in New England.
Bro, those things are gnarly and they will bite you. Even if you don't get a hand on them, they will bite you.
Right, just because like you looked at me, I'm biting you. It's going down.
Yeah. And they bleed. Those bites bleed.
Oh God.
A lot.
And there was never it was never like bite and then done. It's bite. You're gonna get musked on so bad.
Yeah.
It's you're just not having a good time, and you don't even want to touch. Like you see one, and you're like, nah, I'm all set. Like I don't even want to entertain that.
Yeah. After a while, I was like, I don't need to grab that one. I'll just
yeah. Yeah. I don't need to touch every snake I see. It's fine.
Yeah, I'll just take pictures of it from over here.
Yeah.
We have these.
Yeah, we're gonna test out this Zoom.
We have these two-striped garter snakes that are just like that. Like once you pick them up, they just musk and bite
musk.
Until you let go.
No. There's a species of garter snake that is in Arizona. I think they're called a short-nosed garter snake. But it's a water snake, but they call him a garter snake. I don't know why. Yes, this is a garter snake. And their eyes are like at the front of their skull. And they've got the most Nerodia head you've ever seen in your life. They're heavily keeled. And you're like, what do you mean this is a garter snake?
Yeah, I think the narrow-headed garter snake.
Yeah, narrow-headed garter snake. Yeah. I'm like, that's not a garter snake. Come on now. Yeah, someone's got
nothing like
that. Don't lie to me.
Yeah, someone's got to write a paper. It should not be Hoser, but it should be someone else. It should go out there and rewrite that species, because what the hell, man?
Yeah, for real.
I'm trying to think, whereabouts in California are you?
Orange County.
Orange
South.
County area?
Yeah. All right.
And do you go to this? You go to the super shows?
Yeah.
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 I'm very jealous. I'm not going
to lie. Dude, Rob, you got to go to the super show.
I know. So you text. Yeah. He texts me. He's like, man, this place is huge.
Yeah. I was there, and it was like the biggest freaking show. And because I'm also there with US Arc, right? So I'm dressed, you know, nicely, professionally. You know, I strongly recommend comfortable footwear. And I know if Phil listens to this, he will laugh. But he was like, oh, you don't have the right shoes. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, You'll figure it out, but you don't have the right shoes. Oh gosh. But yeah, it was a monster of a show.
It's like that most of the time. It's like that too. Like,
really,
especially at the Pomona one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's dude, it's nuts. Like, Rob, it's like, it's 3 acres under roof.
What?
Yeah.
Is Tinley in Arlington not that big?
No, Arlington's definitely not that big.
Tinley's pretty big.
Tinley is pretty big. I think the thing that maybe makes Tinley feel a bit different is it's not straight aisles that go forever and ever. Yeah. Like, there's a breakup of how that convention hall works.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
so. Yeah, so like you can pretty easily get like confined in a segment of Tinley and just like end up going through like a loop of the same tables. I feel like with Pomona, it was just like you go straight for a really long time and then you make a left or a right and then you go straight for a really long time. So it just, from that instance, it feels larger. And also, the thing that threw me off. So, like, Rob, you'll definitely understand this. The aisle size was like a combination of Tinley meets Daytona. So, like, the aisles are pretty wide.
Wide, yeah.
But you get that insane congestion.
Really.
Dude, like, yes, like that's what threw me for a loop. You know, so like I'm going there to like take, you know, get content, right? And there's people I want to go film with where I'm like, I can't film anything because there's too many people at this table, and like, and it just doesn't, like, it doesn't look good. It's not aesthetically appealing for video. But yeah. I'm like, okay, well, you know, it's a big aisle. It should clear out. It didn't clear out. It didn't clear out. As soon as that group of people left, it was like it just a blob of more people just came through, and I was like, "The hell is going on? Like,
yeah.
What is happening?" But also very impressive. like, because it just goes on forever. And that congestion was like, there were very, very few spots where I felt like, okay, this is like your standard expo crowd, right? Where you can still move comfortably through the aisles. There were not many spots of that.
That's wild, man.
So, yeah, dude. So I 100% recommend going. I 100% recommend comfortable shoes. And it was great. It was great. My feet still hurt, but it was great.
Regret. Mistakes were made. God. Mistakes were made.
mistakes were made. Preparations will be made. I'll be back there again in June. So preparation will be made in the footwear department to not make those same mistakes again.
Dude, hell yeah.
Oh gosh. But yeah, Rob, you gotta go. 100% you gotta go.
Yeah. I keep saying it. Yeah. I gotta just buckle down and do it.
You got to do it, dude. 100% got to do it. Because I'll tell you, one of the things that knocked my socks off at that show, besides meeting a lot of the West Coast folks that we typically don't see, the albino Euromastics. Did you see those, Aiden?
Maybe. I don't know. Not that I remember.
Yeah. Oh, man, dude. Marquee Reptiles brought those lavender albino Saharan Euromastics, and those things, like the pictures that have been floating around of them are, you know, impressive, but
yeah,
seeing those in person was cool. Like, dude, it was next level. They were glowing. Like, they were glowing. And by the time I got over there to film, like, the sun was also hitting that booth because he was right up against the side wall. So the sun was hit. They just looked pristine. And I was like, oh, I'm so happy I'm here right now. Yeah, those were cool. I don't know if he's going to be there again, but if he is, I strongly suggest making a pit stop to go see albino Euromastics.
Definitely.
That's cool. That's
heck
cool.
Yeah, dude. Heck yeah. There's so many shows. Like, just in general, there's so many shows. Like, I don't know, how many shows do you go to, Aiden?
It's really just the super shows, and then there's this one called Repticon. That's really it that's around me.
Okay. Man, I would kill for that kind of space between shows. Yeah. Here in the Southeast, it's shows every weekend.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're willing to drive a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. I forgot who I was talking to, but some vendor out here was like, yeah, we've got 40 dates locked in. And I was like, that's a show every week. That's like the whole year, dude. That's like, when are you going to, you get one weekend off a month. Like, yeah. What the heck? That's insane to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. I'll take 3 super shows a year. That's fine.
Bruh.
Oh gosh.
Well, Aiden, we're wrapping up our time here. We're just about an hour in. We ask every single one of our guests one big question at the end of the show to kind of wrap things up. And that question is, what in the realm of reptiles, be it something that you're working on in your own collection or something that you've seen online or elsewhere, what is something that has you excited about reptiles right now?
I guess just like improvement as far as keeping and whatnot across the board. Like, there's obviously still exceptions, but I feel like across the board we're mainly getting better as far as keeping.
Hell yeah.
Heck yeah. I'm here for that, dude.
That's awesome. Heck yeah. I'm here for it. Yeah. As people are working on, bigger, more elaborate enclosures and streamlining breeding processes. Yeah. I think that things are just getting better as we go, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Hell yeah. All right. Yeah, so, man. if people want to find out more about you and the things that you're doing, where should they look you up?
It's SoCalBeowox on Instagram, and then Aiden Bradley on Facebook. And that's pretty much it. Or SoCalBeowox on Morph Market too.
Hey.
Sometimes I have some stuff on there.
Sometimes some stuff makes it to there. Usually,
right, you know. Right. Heck yeah, dude. Well, yeah, man, thank you so much for your time, dude. It was great to talk with you and learn about some Doom Rolls monitor stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming in. Thank you,
Heck
man.
Yeah.
All right, we'll catch you next time.
We'll catch you later.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
See ya.
Later.